Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hello, and welcome to Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know, a show where we talk about musicals and everything they've taught us. Shock horror. My name is Julie Eisentrager, and with me today I have one other host, and that beautiful, delightful human is...
It's me, KB!
KB!
Hello, everyone!
Hello!
Hello, Julie!
Hello! Hi, how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. How are you?
I'm good, thank you.
That's good.
We also have a guest with us.
We do.
It's rare that we just ramble as a pair.
Can you imagine if it was just the two of us?
That
would be awful.
It would be like a completely different podcast.
Yeah, it would be.
Coming back for a second time, we didn't scare him away the first time. No. Matt Young.
Hey, Julie. Hey, KB. How's it going?
Good,
it's good to be back. Thanks for having me back.
Oh,
woo!
It's so
We're
nice.
We're glad to have you back.
Thanks.
Before we talk about the show you've brought to us today, it's been a hot couple of months. 3 months, 4 months since we last heard from you. Maybe longer. But we're going to have to get to know you again.
Oh, great.
Are you ready to do the getting to know you quiz?
Sure, why not?
Do you want to be Miranda?
Sure.
Do you want me to be Miranda?
You should probably. You and Miranda have the same casting type, so I feel like it's better that you fill Miranda's shoes for this
All right,
one.
Drunk mother.
Okay, my confession, the first time I did this, I was like super prepared, and I was like, oh, I thought deeply about all this. I'm on the cuff today.
So I love like, that.
Oh, it's just going to be the first thing that pops
flying
into
by the seat of my
It's going to fit with the drunk mother theme it's I'm going to bring
like
to this intro.
Improv getting to know you.
Okay, are we ready? Getting to know you. I think that was perfect, Miranda.
That
I think I've nailed it.
That was great.
I've done it. Okay. Which musical character would other people compare you to?
Okay. Well, let me see. I would like, you know, I just saw Shrek. So like Shrek's on the top of my mind today. So I think I would probably be more of a Lord Farquaad than a Shrek. Yeah.
Big castle, little man.
Well, we're not going to go there. We are, you know, this is a family
it's PG
show.
Show.
So, but yes, yeah, it was hilarious. And actually, but I'm always sort of like strutting around telling everyone what to do. And then, you know, in the end, sometimes the castle topples.
Oh, no. I mean, I don't compare you to Lord Farquaad, if that makes you feel any better.
But also just because I love the character. And I was like, oh, my God. And Todd was so funny. Tom McKinney was so funny. And I was like, oh.
It would be fun.
It would be fun.
If it didn't require so many knee pads. It would
Well, there's that. Yeah, I don't know if my knees
I'd want like 80 pairs to do that.
I'd probably just stay standing, to be honest. I'm very short.
For the audience, Kenny is about 5'2".
Oh, yeah, around about that.
Okay, all right. Well, which musical character would you like other people to compare you to?
Well, clearly it would be Mother Abbess from The Sound of Music.
I see that.
Amazing!
Because, you know, because if people think I'm as
pious,
twisted as Lord Farquaad, then, you know, the opposite would be
I see
the
you've
divine
gone. Okay.
Mother Abbess.
Okay.
The all-knowing.
Yeah.
The one that, you know, can hear the mountains.
Why?
Or,
yes. And all knowledgeable.
And willing to hide people in her church. Yes.
In her wimple.
Compassionate.
In her wimple.
In her wimple.
Come under here. No one can find you now. Oh boy, this is going off quickly.
Yep.
What is your dream role?
Oh gosh. Well, it's Beetlejuice.
Ooh.
I'm like a new Beetlejuice convert.
Yeah.
I know Eddie who wrote it, but I just hadn't quite got it until recently, and now I was like, oh my gosh, that would be so much fun.
Yeah.
Because he's so ridiculous and off the wall, and I'm guess I'm finding out that I'm a little bit more ridiculous and off the wall than I realized. So, yeah, I just think that would be really great.
Vocally,
so,
oh
when
boy.
You bring it, when you bring it over to Australia,
Eddie,
I'm waiting.
Eddie, yeah, when you bring it to Australia,
bring it home.
Okay, call
thanks.
Matt. Yeah, do it.
What is your favorite Sondheim show?
Well, the last time I was here, I talked about a funny thing that happened on the way of the forum, mm-hmm. and uh-huh. I adore it. Uh-huh. I'm going to tie it with uh-huh. Company, because yeah. I'm a bit obsessed with Company.
Yeah.
I saw the production in the West End, uh-huh. With the gender swap.
So
casting,
jealous.
And it was really, really, like, it was just fresh and new. And I was like, oh, here's a show that I've seen like a million times. You know, I saw David Campbell do it in Australia, and I was like, wow, and it's different and it's new and it's still the
can
same.
Can you take something more away from it?
Yes, yeah. You can, especially when with the gender swap. It sort of really puts that crisis of, like, you know, you need to get married into yeah. a very different sort of space. It was really quite cool.
That's awesome.
So, yeah, so I'm going to go Company.
Oh, I love that. I love that
so
answer.
So good.
Is your go-to shower song still same, or have we got a different one
right
this week?
Right now, my go-to shower song is King of Broadway from The Producers,
nice.
Because I need to learn those lyrics because yeah. I'm playing Max Bialystock in a production that's coming up, which we'll probably talk about later.
Yeah,
very soon.
Yeah.
I'm excited
rehearsals have just started for that.
We have our read-through. Yes, we've had music rehearsals and read-throughs, and it's exciting. Yes.
It is exciting.
I'm excited to see it.
I am excited to see it. It's going to be great.
Day? Yeah. Great. Yeah. We'll sort this out later.
Yeah, not on air. Not on air. It's going to be great.
You have to delete one musical from existence. Which one is it?
Okay. Well, I'm so reluctant to say this because, there's a million reasons why I can't get rid of it. But I will, like, base solely on the fact that I just cannot stand the score, and it's The Color Purple.
Ooh. I have to admit
it's like,
that I haven't.
It's one of my favorite movies of all time, and maybe that's why I don't like the musical. Uh-huh. But I don't know. Every time I listen to it, I kind of go, I'm just not happy. And so, yeah, if it didn't exist, I wouldn't have ever heard it, and then I couldn't have been unhappy.
I mean,
but for everybody that, you know, it's an amazing show, and so, I don't really wish it out of existence.
Yeah.
It's a conflict, but I don't like the music.
I haven't listened to it myself
yeah, I have to
either.
Admit that I haven't.
However, I can see from your point of view that if you did really love the movie and the musical is not what you had hoped for the movie to become to a musical, I'd also be pretty peeved.
Yeah, but I mean, but it's an amazing show, so who am I to say?
You're allowed to delete whatever music. It's
I mean, you had to
well,
do
the
it.
Thing is,
yeah,
it's, you know, well, I mean, it's kind
it.
Of
we're
bad because it's deleting because, you know, it's like, because I'm sort of going at it for, like, if it never existed to begin uh-huh. with,
yeah.
and there was no
that's
memory of it,
yeah.
you know, and then maybe somebody else would have written
we asked
a
you to
version
delete
that
it.
I like.
That's
from
okay.
existence.
Oh my God.
It's gone.
Okay, if you wrote it.
If you wrote it, I
still love
just,
you. But
just, you know, just delete this from your playlist and hire me for whatever Broadway show you're doing next.
This is a different Matt Young than Matt Young, you think.
Yeah,
is.
No, that's that other Matt
that's
Young. It's a really common name. Very confusing.
Alrighty, well, let's play a short bit of music and then talk about Annie.
Ooh.
I love
that
right.
one. That's my favorite.
It's my favorite
it's
too.
It's so good.
Anyway.
Benedict, you're such a clever boy.
We have made it, almost 4 years, and we haven't talked about Annie yet.
I know. How?
This was so confusing to me because you're like, oh, do you want to come on? I'm like, okay, well, let's do, you know, like, most obscure musical ever written. And you're like, no, it's been done. I'm like, well, how about other most obscure musical that's ever written that, you know, one person saw? Nope, we've done it. And so then I was like, Annie? Annie?
Yeah,
so here we are.
If we could tell you how, we would. But we have no idea how we got to this point.
It makes no sense, but it's fantastic. Because it's an. I think it's an amazing musical. Hit after hit after hit. You know what I mean? Like, it's
I don't know if the teens these
friendly.
Days would call this a bop. but maybe a banger.
Maybe a banger.
There is a couple of bangers.
And to be fair, the teens of today have probably only seen the 2014 movie. So they would probably say
well,
it's a banger.
I asked Miranda to ask her niece Astrid mm-hmm. what she thought of the musical Annie. And she came back with, I haven't seen it.
That was her review.
And I'm not surprised. I have a feeling, I have a theory that Annie sits in a space of anyone born
born in the 70s, a child of the 80s, or born early 80s, love Annie. Love it sick. And then children from about the 90s onwards are a bit indifferent about it.
That's fair.
Yeah.
Well, I'm 1972 drop, so, you know, like, it was, like, especially the movie, you know, with... Carol Burnett and all those people.
How did we forget Carol Burnett?
Tim Curry and Bernard Pierce. But yeah, I mean, that was like, you know, that was my jam, yeah.
Yes. So you've got 2 minutes.
Oh boy.
To tell us the plot of Annie. Have you got the timer over there?
I will have the timer. Yep.
Okay. When you're ready. Elevator plot.
Okay, winging it. So there's this lovable orphan named Annie, this lovable redhead. She lives in an orphanage full of girls with this mean woman who is taking care of them, Miss Hannigan. And for some reason, I can't remember, someone from Millionaire Daddy Warbucks' office comes and takes her away.
And they decide
that they were going to, you know, put Annie with Daddy Warbucks. And mm-hmm. then she wins her way into his heart. And by the end of the play, he has decided to adopt her. But in the meantime, there's, like, bad guys, and they're trying to, like, steal her away and pretend to be her parents.
Which is kind of my favorite part of the whole show.
Yeah.
The bad guys are rad.
Yeah, so that's kind of, that was it.
That was
super
quick. You did that in 45 seconds. So
you crushed it.
You crushed it.
I'm very proud.
Thanks.
So good. Guys, if you haven't seen Annie, it's available on Netflix, Stan, Disney Plus.
Probably YouTube.
Broadway HD. YouTube. You have no excuses at this point.
Yeah.
But it's true. Yeah. It's it's a fun little show for kids, I think. As a child, I never got to do it, so I'm not quite sure.
I've musically directed it for children, and I think it is a great show for kids to do, but the whole cast is children.
Have you done the full Annie, or because there's licenses and Annie Junior and Annie Kids, which is the 30-minute one?
Oh, I could have gone for that, but no, I did Annie Junior.
That's so cute.
That's what I hear.
30-minute
Annie.
That would be quick.
Must be true.
That would be really fast.
It's for primary school kids.
It's with all the villains taken out, I assume.
Maybe. Because the structure of the show is really weird because it's like, sort of like kids, you know, then principals, then ensemble. Kids, principals, ensemble. Like, it's just, you could easily pick it apart and just be like, boom, we're just going to focus on those kids.
Now, you were in the show, Matt.
I was in the 2012 Australian revival of Annie.
I think I saw that.
Starring Nancy Hayes and Anthony Warlow.
Yeah.
And a bunch of young women. In Brisbane, we had... In every city, we had... it depended on the child labor laws in the state. So we usually had 3 casts. I think we had 4 casts in WA or something like that. I can't remember.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So there were a lot
of
kids.
That's a lot.
Which is amazing. Yeah. They were all wonderful.
Yay.
Cute.
I didn't realize that Annie was a comic strip first until I started researching.
It's right there on the program.
It's right here in the program. And originally, Daddy Warbucks made his money selling weapons and ammunition, which is why he was called Warbucks! Bam, bam!
Mind blown.
Well, I didn't know. Yes, so you're absolutely 100% right. It was this comic strip, and then... But the story of Annie, which I just told you very quickly in 45 seconds, is completely new and was made for the musical based on the characters from the comic strip, which blows my mind because I just sort of think of like Annie's like, you know, it's like the Secret Garden or it's like, you know, something that's been around forever and ever and ever or Shakespeare. But no, it's only been around since the 70s.
Yeah. Is there a Calvin and Hobbes the musical? Because
not yet.
Too bad of that.
If there is, I would definitely, I would definitely go for that.
Yeah, Annie, the comic strip Annie, is a little terrifying looking. She's got some demon eyes about her. But yeah, tell us a little bit more about like your experience being in the 2012 show. Like highlights?
Well, Anthony Warlow.
Highlight.
Absolute highlight. I don't know how many shows we did. I think we did 213 shows over 11 months. Anthony didn't miss any shows until... Okay. He was plucked from our production and put into the Broadway revival. But he was an absolute dream. And he told us like all these great things because he worked with Martin Sharnan, who wrote the show, who directed it the first time that Anthony did it in Australia. And what he talks about all the time is that we were just talking about the comic strip and Annie has those crazy eyes with no pupils.
Yeah.
And he said, well, that's what he said. That was our job, was to put the soul, was to color in the pupils for these characters, because the characters in the comic strip are very two dimensional, and to make them full. So that was absolutely lovely. I mean, I think he's an amazing man. His voice, heaven. Yeah. And also, I mean, just the touring was fun. We got to go to a lot of cities with it. We went to Perth, Brisbane, Sydney, and Melbourne. And I don't know. I don't know why Adelaide didn't happen. I think we were scheduled, but it didn't happen. But anyway, but that was fantastic. I mean, I love traveling. It's such a luxury to be an actor when you get to, like, you know, especially, you know, after what's been going on, when you get to travel to all these places as an actor is just awesome. And so, like, I have a very warm spot in my heart for Perth now that I've been there. But Brisbane, of course, you know, it's always best place to be.
It doesn't have to be. It's fine.
It's always the best place to be.
We're not going to be offended.
No, it is. It's great. I was actually talking to some of the people from Shrek, and we were talking about how, like, when you bring a show, if you're Melbourne or Sydney based and you come to Brisbane, it's like schoolies week. It's like everyone's like on holidays. You're like, woo! Every night's a party in Brisbane.
Oh boy.
So.
Well, speaking about Anthony Waller and his pluck from the Australian production into the Broadway revival, it's super impossible almost to find a bad review of Annie.
Of Annie in general.
Unless you're looking at like a local theatre production, near impossible. But I did manage to find a 4-star as a...
That's the worst review, a 4-star review.
As a... I think it... I don't know if it's a critic or if it's like an audience member who had seen it in Broadway. But I think it potentially is a critic. This is on BroadwayWorld.com. And this tickled me.
Oh, no.
I said it last week. This one also tickled me pink. This is from Matt Windman on the 11th of August 2012. Annie, one of the most heartwarming and beloved musicals of all time, has been all but butchered by James Lapine, a playwright director, best known for his original and edgy collaborations with Stephen Sondheim and William Finn. In his charmless and misconceived new Broadway revival, Lapine is hardly a bad director, rather the co-creative force behind such musicals as Sunday in the Park with George and Falsettos. It's just simply the wrong choice for Annie. In the title role, Lilla Crawford, 11, has a strong presence but lacks a vulnerability and is strangely encouraged to use a thick Brooklyn accent and far too much bravado. Two-time Tony winner Katie Ferrinen, who recently made a splash in Promises, Promises, delivers surprisingly hollow performance as Miss Hannigan, consisting entirely of shtick. Anthony Waller, an unknown Australian actor.
Hello.
This one tickled me. Is especially convincing as the industrialist turned father, Daddy Warbucks. So Anthony Waller was the only person to get a good review in this.
For those playing at home, Lilla Crawford, who was the Annie in that production, is the little red in James Lapine's Into the Wood movie.
Oh, yes. Boy.
So he obviously likes to work with the same people, but she's also quite good. Yeah.
I also took this with a grain of salt because I do think this is just a somebody off the street review. But I did find it quite funny. Like, I'm like, really? Really, though? Like, well, I doubt it, I buddy.
They didn't get raves for that revival.
Oh, no.
From what I'm aware of. It didn't run for, you know, the 6 years or whatever that the original production ran for.
It ran for 2,377 performances. It was the longest running show at the Elvin Theatre, which is now the Neil Simon Theatre, until 2009 when Hairspray took over.
So that was the original production that ran
for production ran for 2,300. So it wasn't.
I wonder if you wonder how many times they said the word tomorrow.
So many times.
So many times.
And plus, speaking of tomorrow, one of the fun facts I found was that the song Tomorrow is reportedly the most performed song from the 70s and 80s and is sung every 20 minutes somewhere in the world.
Oh?
I would believe it. My mother sent me like an email the other day and she said, don't forget the sun will come out tomorrow.
And
I was like,
aw. Oh, that's so sweet. That's adorable.
That is.
Yeah.
There have been a few celebrities that have gone through
quite a few
the Anniedom.
Anniedom.
The
for Annie Dem. Sarah Jessica Parker has played Annie. We've had Molly Ringwald and Alyssa Milano as orphans. Jane Lynch as Miss Hannigan. A little Sarah Hyland was in the Disney version of Annie. Like, there's so many. Leia Salonga was in the first Philippines production of Annie in 1980.
As a kid.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that would have been amazing.
Like, it's a star vehicle. I also didn't know that it had two stage sequels called Annie 2, Miss Hannigan's Revenge. That was in 1989. I would like to see that.
I could go for that
and
one.
And Annie Warbucks in 1993.
Yeah, I was a student at NYU during in 1993. So I remember walking by the theater for Annie Warbucks, and Donna McKechnie, who was in Chorus Line, was in it. And I never went to see it. It was a very small theater. I've seen shows in that theater. It was a very small theater.
I don't know what it's about, but I like to imagine that Annie has gone off the rails and is selling drugs.
Well, I don't think that's where it's going to go.
Miss Hannigan's definitely in it, though.
Because then she'd be Annie Drug Bucks.
Oh, boy. Well... After that terrible pun, according to the New York Times, Annie has produced 700 to 900 times each year in the US in some form or another. So I know we talked briefly about, I don't know whether it was on air or off air at this point, there's only really been three really big productions of it here in Australia and overseas. It's kind of like it's performed professionally not very often, but it's a show that everybody knows and everybody has probably seen at some stage, whether it's a school production, an amateur or community theatre production, or a touring production of it. But to be produced 700 to 900 times a year in the US alone, it's a popular show.
But we have to talk about this 1982 movie.
Goodness.
Because, all right, so I was like, in primary school, and I was part of the gymnastics club, and there was so much gymnastics in It's a Hard Knock Life, all the flipping and stuff. Yeah. And so that became a staple of things. we all learned something from Annie in gym club. And honestly, looking back, after all these years, looking back at that movie, it's so good.
It's
directed so well. The cinematography, the choreography. Arlene Phillips did the choreography, who is also Whitney Houston's, I want to dance with somebody choreographer. Yeah. It's just crazy. It's a great film. So
it's an awesome film.
If you don't know Annie yet, and you haven't been in one of those hundreds of professional productions or amateur productions, check out the movie.
Check it out. I would check out that movie first as
that
well.
Movie's fantastic.
Absolutely. It's so good. And a little, is it Aileen Quinn as Annie, was a swing orphan in the original Broadway production. So she had played pretty much every role except Annie at that point.
Aww.
And then went on to play Annie in the film, which is awesome.
Yeah, she talks about, there was a 30th anniversary interview on Playbill, and she talks about doing the show during the day and having to be secret about auditioning for the movie, when she wasn't at the theater, because obviously everybody that was in the show wanted to be in the movie, and she was the one.
She was the one. There are a lot of other cast members who could have been very different if they had accepted the roles when they were first offered to them. So Steve Martin was originally offered Rooster.
That was a very different pick.
Yes, but he actually turned it down because him and Bernadette Peters had been dating and they'd just broken up, and it wasn't a good breakup. It was so he decided it would be too painful for them to work together.
I wonder who was the biggest diva in that relationship.
So Steve Martin, Miss Hannigan was originally offered to Bette Midler, but she decided she didn't want to appear in the film, so it went to Carol Burnett.
Semi-mad about
that
one.
But did you also read about when they were developing the show originally, Martin Sharon and team, that they were suggesting either Bette Midler or Bernadette Peters play down the age to play the role of Annie? And then they were like, no, the show is going to be the star. The show is going to be the star. It's going to be unknown.
Yeah, kids. I think that's
that would have been weird.
It's so weird.
Very weird. Play down your age.
Play down your age. Sean Connery was approached for Daddy Warbucks, but he didn't want to be bald, so he said no. And Cary Grant was also asked to play Daddy Warbucks, and he was in his late 70s at the time and hadn't done a movie since 1966, but he was asked first before they ended up going with.
Do you know what? I couldn't even tell you. Yeah, I can't even tell you who that guy is, because in
Albert
my head,
Finney. Albert Finney. Finney.
In my head, it's
who was a Shakespearean actor. So the director wasn't entirely sure if he could pull off what they needed for film, which is why they were asking other people first. So
but then I also, because I watched the It's a Hard Knock Life clip today, and so then I was like, oh my gosh, the cinematography is amazing. And I went on IMDb, and the cinematographer, that was his last film that he ever did. He's still like alive and around, yeah, but he's clearly not doing
Wait,
that
he's
anymore.
Alive? No, he's not.
What, the cinematographer?
Oh, I thought you said the cinematographer.
For the,
I thought you were Albert Finney. I'm like, no,
well,
he's
maybe,
dead.
I don't know.
It was one of the highest grossing films.
Lots of drugs for Manny on the way in.
It was one of the highest grossing films for 1982, but it cost them $40 million to make,
boy.
So it never made back any profit, even though it was the 10th or 11th highest grossing film for that year.
Right. And Eileen Quinn said that she was contracted by Paramount or whoever made it to make sequels, to make up to six sequels. And because then the comic strip originally, you know, there were all these different adventures that
oh
she went
boy.
On. Yeah. And that's part of, if you've seen the movie and you've seen the stage show, you might notice there's a major difference because there's this chase scene with a railway bridge. And that was sort of, I think, shuffled into the movie because they were afraid that they weren't going to be able to, you know, continue making more of them. And that would have been like a completely different adventure in a different Annie movie somewhere. I don't know.
Well,
she said something like that.
Martin.
Paraphrasing.
Obviously, we talked about him before. He's a conceiver, director, and lyricist of the Broadway hit. He didn't like the movie. Oh. He was not a fan. When he sold the rights, at I think it was $9 million for the rights for them to produce the film, he also relinquished all creative control. So, I mean, that's also very, very trusted. Someone
for $9 million, though,
it's your baby, and you don't get an opportunity to have the final say of a product that has lasted 40-odd years.
I mean, Carol Burnett, and Rankin, Tim Curry, Bernadette Peters.
Yeah,
how could you not like any of the above?
Well,
like,
good question. He said Warbucks, played by Albert Finney, was an Englishman who screamed. Hannigan, played by Carol Burnett, was a man crazy drunk, and Annie was cutied up. Worse, the emotional relationship between Annie and Warbucks was distorted. They even downplayed the hit song Tomorrow because Stark thought it was corny.
I mean, agree. I think Maybe is very underrated.
Maybe it's a great
song. Because Tomorrow
song
is trash compared to Maybe.
Maybe is beautiful. Maybe is the one that makes me cry.
Me too.
I used to sing it to my kids.
Oh,
to go to sleep at night.
Oh, stop it. Oh, that's adorable.
But I think if you have to make Annie somewhat cutesy because I can't actually read what's written on my notes because it's abusive. But Annie's a bit of a mole. Like, she's a brat.
I think she's a brat due to circumstance, and obviously if your mother figure is Miss Hannigan, like if that's the influence that you've had your entire life, there are some kids who, like Molly, who would be sweet and quiet and submissive, and there'd be some kids, naturally, like Annie, who are like, oi, don't tell me what to do, you're not my mom. So
you're not my real mom.
Joke's
on you, kid.
I think I don't mind. I actually prefer an Annie with a little bit more gravitas to her.
I like
know?
Some oomph, but I want her to be cute and oomphy.
She's scrappy.
She's scrappy. That's
scrappy's
a great word.
Scrappy's a good definition for what I'm
That is a great
wanting
word.
Wanting from my Annie. Because I've seen her played too harsh, and I'm like, you're just a mole. Like, I don't care what happens to you.
Well, that
I
little
don't.
That little Crawford accent. Really.
The Brooklyn
I was
would be
like,
rough.
What is going on with that? And I lived in New York and I was like, really?
Like, okay. This is a choice.
But that wasn't her choice. That was James Pines.
Mr. James.
Boy.
But yeah.
All right.
I think it's, sorry. My ears are starting to hurt from the headphones, which is why I made a little bit of noise. Okay. But there are a lot of, I think every Annie, at least in the film version, every Annie is played very differently. Aileen Quinn's is not the same as the Disney. It's not the same as the Jamie Foxx remake. I think that is probably the beauty of giving a newcomer the opportunity to give their voice to a very iconic role that would be very daunting for a small child.
And also we get a new movie once every decade. Like, that's pretty good innings for a show that was like conceived in the 70s. Once a decade, we get a new Annie.
Oh, would you? Would you for a new Annie?
Would you in a couple of years? Anyway, all right, let's move on to the lessons we've learned from Annie. Lessons we've learned. I have a big one for this segment because there is a lot I learned from one particular song from the stage show. Don't ask me what that song's called, though. Herbert Hoover?
We'd like to thank you, Hoover.
Yeah,
Hoover,
it's the Hooverville song. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I learned so much out of that song. I was like, I didn't know there was like a little tent city going on. I had no idea of any of the historical context until I was in that show. I was like, oh, damn.
Yeah.
And I have won trivia contests by getting specific questions about Herbert Hoover. I can't say it. Herbert Hoover. Thank you. I can't say it now.
You're doing great.
Specific questions about him because of Annie. I'm like crushing it.
Thanks, Annie.
Honestly, I mean, the book is like amazing for the and so well researched and so historically excellent. And if we talk about the new movie with Jamie Foxx. Like I actually, because I saw it shortly after we had finished the 2012 production, and I was like, actually, this is actually like the book, the screenplay of that is really true to the historical, like, well, you know, sort of the spirit of the original show as well. So I actually quite liked that. Annie as well.
I liked everything about it but Cameron Diaz.
I don't blame you.
Yes. I will admit that. I think one of the big, like, underlining kind of universal themes of Annie is that everyone just wants to be loved. And that can, like, manifest in lots of different ways, even from Miss Hannigan to Daddy Warbucks. Like, everyone just wants that connection of some kind, and it comes out in... but it is, and it isn't just, I think, that Annie and Daddy Warbucks relationship that we see that in. It's with Grace and Rooster and Lily to a point too, is they're just all trying to find the place, and what they need probably most is emotion, people connection, you know?
Yeah.
Yes, absolutely. And another lesson that we've learned is that everybody loves the underdog.
Exactly. That's my next one.
And in this musical in particular, there is actually an underdog.
A literal dog.
and we, like, in our production in Australia, and I know in the original production as well, they always used rescue dogs. Like, mm-hmm. they found dogs that, you know, didn't have a home and that were sort of like trained into the role and then sort of went on to have a lovely home after.
That's a big risk too.
Yeah. So Annie loves we love the underdog. That's what we learned from Annie. I know.
And it goes against the rules of working with both animals and children.
You've done it all.
I also, I'm not always a massive fan of Disney remakes, but if you're going to give me a Disney remake with Kathy Bates, Kristen Chenoweth, mm-hmm. Alan Cumming, mm-hmm. and Victor Garber,
delicious.
And Audra McDonald, and also just like they cut a few things out, they swapped it around. Grace sings Tomorrow instead of Annie, which I think is such a beautiful little moment between the two of them too, as a kind of you can do it, it's okay, instead of Annie having to sing so much of that show. I would say it was very, they did a good job with this one.
So Disney must be due to do the next one as well.
If that's the way, if they're going to do every second remake, then yes, they are. Yeah. Oh, I'm still like buzzing from the rescue dog story. Guys, that's so sweet.
Other lessons learned. Let's see what else. Don't climb a railroad bridge at night.
Yeah.
Yes, fair. Very fair.
If that's where we had to learn it from, yes.
If you're going to be a villain, you better have a great song to sing and dance so that everyone still loves you, even though you're evil.
Did you learn anything from being on tour of Annie?
Well, I actually have something really personal to share about Annie, because I'm an adoptive parent. And so we were foster parents, and our kids' adoption came through in February. Like, we started performances in January and the adoption came through in February of 2012, which was incredibly moving. And so I could never watch the second half of the show when Daddy Warbucks and Annie have Something Is Missing and they sort of like dance together and stuff, because I was like, ugh. And I watched it when Anthony, like, his last performance before he was whisked off to Broadway. So I guess the lesson there is try to make life imitate art.
That's super cute.
That is so
I
nice.
Love that.
Oh my goodness.
And of course, like, my kids loved the show because they were like, because they've just seen it like 6 times. Oh, yeah, no, lots of lessons. Another lesson I learned, and this has changed, was that, you know, even if your kids are on school holidays and your partner's away, you can't bring your kids backstage. But that's changed. But my kids had like crazy good babysitters during Annie. Like, people like Lucy Maunder and you know, all these other people who like didn't have shows were like, oh yeah, I'll look after the kids. So yeah, so that's a great lesson from Annie, is that Annie is about family. Yeah. You know, it's about the found family. And when you're doing a big musical, as we all know, yeah, you find your family. And so that was wonderful as well.
Yeah.
Family that in so beautiful. Many ways.
Yeah. Found family particularly. It's I love that term. It's awesome. Oh, guys. This episode is so wholesome.
It's very wholesome.
I think it's the most wholesome episode.
Are you upset drug about this, Annie?
We'll just pretend that never happened.
All right. Any more lessons?
No, I think that's a really nice note to finish on.
Well, the other... Well, it's not necessarily a lesson, but... Mm-hmm. If you've seen the 1982 film, you know that Annie has that beautiful curly hair during the entire show. In the stage show, the lesson I learned is that she wears a straight wig until like the very end when they sing, gussy her up, and then she comes out with like the curly hair and like that horrible red dress that looks like the comic strip, and you're like, she looks worse than she looked before. Like, what the heck did the styling team do to her?
The perm is the gussying.
Yes, also, the perm's the gussying.
That wig for the 1980, it was a wig for the 1982 film, and Aileen was so itchy all the time, they gave her a special comb so that she could scratch her scalp during production. The poor little gem.
I also learnt what gussy meant. To gussy someone up. I was like, oh, stop it. Alright, let's move on to our dream cast. Okay, I really don't know. I'm gonna put Yes, I do know where I'm gonna put Zac Efron.
Yeah, I was like, there's only one role, mate.
Rooster.
Yeah.
I am not mad about that cast. Sorry, that was really loud. Producer Zayda's dry reach.
Zac Efron.
I have not thought about him, but yes, we could put him
we
there.
We have to. It's okay. A thing.
Do we have to put everyone from High School Musical?
No, just Zac.
Okay.
It's
could
our
put,
tagline.
You could actually.
We could put a lot of them in there.
You could.
We could do it like the Muppets version.
Yes.
You know,
always
like
the most
Miss
fun.
Miss Piggy is going to be, you know, Miss Hannigan. Kermit's going to be Oliver Orbux, you know.
Do we have a human, maybe a human Annie and a human Grace?
For the Muppets one?
Yeah.
Maybe
like,
just
who's
a human
humans?
Annie?
Maybe just human Annie?
Because
they always
know.
Have humans. They
yeah, I suppose so. Oh, yeah, that would be cool. Yeah, yeah, let's go with that.
Oh, nice.
Like that.
I mean, there aren't a lot of female Muppets choose
I'm
from,
also very happy with Bernadette Peters playing down the age in the Muppets version.
Yes.
That was Annie.
I'm happy with that casting.
Or how about Betty White?
Oh, yes. With her curly red wig.
Oh, and I want the chickens to sing Gussier up.
She's the right height, I guess.
Could you imagine? That would be so funny.
I reckon she'd be for it.
Oh, she would be.
She would 100%
do
it.
She'd be like,
poor
yes.
Betty.
If the Muppets ask you to do anything, you say yes.
You say yes. Excuse me, Mrs. Ms. White, you legend of stage and screen. Would you like to play Annie?
Oh boy.
All right. If we weren't going to do a Muppets version.
Which is hard to knock now.
Which is hard. Yeah, I know, it's hard. I think keeping Annie as a relative newcomer is a really nice tradition.
And almost a must.
Yes.
At 10, 11 years old.
I mean, there are a lot more child stars around that can, like. Kids are producing music
so
at 10
now. There's so many more
now.
Famous children than like, us.
Yeah. So for dream casting, do you guys watch Lemony Snicket?
Yeah.
You know, the baby. We could cast that baby now as Annie and just wait.
That's perfect.
She'll be perfect.
I mean, Anthony Warlow is my Daddy Warbucks at heart.
I mean, Warlow, like, yeah, yes. That is dream casting. Like, I actually did get to do it with dream casting with, you know, Nancy
you
Hayes
did
and
have
Anthony
an
Warlow
amazing.
And Todd McKinney and
Chloe Delamore
and Julie Goodwin. Yeah. I mean, it was just like, that was
a beautiful cast.
Such an amazing cast. Yeah. So there's, yeah, I've fulfilled a lot of the dream casting. But of course, my dream would be me as Daddy Warbucks.
I was about to say, you have to be
Warbucks. Well, I could do Rooster and still let Anthony Warlow be my production.
I would watch you as Warbucks.
Yeah. And maybe Anthony Warlow could be a great Rooster.
Or Annie.
He'd probably
he
love
do
it.
Anything.
He'd probably love it. I would like to see Allison Janney and Hannigan just for
that's
a bit
a
of fun.
Good casting.
And having now read Steve Martin being offered Warbucks, I would like to see his version of Warbucks, you know? He's like just to
was
see.
Was he Warbucks or was he being. Oh, yeah. Was he.
No,
yeah.
Rooster. He was Rooster, but like let's put him in the Warbucks role, yeah, opposite someone like Mary Steenburgen or something as Grace.
She cannot, you know, sing,
I mean, sure, she sings a lot in Zoe's Extraordinary Playlist.
And is any of it good?
She's very sweet.
Bernadette Peters, I would now like to see as Hannigan.
Yeah.
There's such a tradition. I mean, in Australia, there's that tradition, like Nancy Hayes has done it like all three times. Mm-hmm. She was like a Boylan sister. So I don't know what she was. I think she was in direction. I could be making it up. But yeah, but so like for me, like, you know, if we're looking at Australians, it's sort of like, well, let's put Chloe.
Yeah.
You know, let's try Chloe Dalmore as Ms. Hannigan. Up. You know what I mean? Let's try Rachel Marley, who's, you know, my friend that I was talking about that played Annie, like, back in the 2000 production. Let's put her into the role of Grace. You know, like, let's just keep moving people around. But then that doesn't give new people a chance. So we need to let new people in there
the
as
well.
The
new one is Annie. And then she gets bumped up
as the new one. The new one is
as
Annie.
The production
and all
goes
the other orphans.
And all the other orphans.
But then we've got, like, some, like, crazy, interesting singers. Like, I would love to see, you know, Ursula Jovic? Do you know who she is?
No.
Or Casey Donovan would be really cool as... Ms. Hannigan.
Yeah, Casey Donovan would make a nice Hannigan.
Yeah. I mean, the thing about Annie that I think is so interesting is that it's... Peter Casey Martin music will be mad at me, but it's not... It's a big sing for Annie. It's not a big sing for the other adult roles. Yeah. I mean, obviously, like, Warlow... you know, Warlow. Jenny Warbucks. Like, you know, it's... You have to have a particular range. But it is more about... Like, it's a funny show, and so it's more about the characters and the character acting. So there's a lot of bodies there.
Yeah.
So Zac Efron.
Well, if we don't put Zac, I'd bring back the partnership of Jeremy Jordan and Laura Osnes as Rooster and Lily.
Yes, please.
Just because I
could see Sutton in a few years as Miss Hannigan as well.
So good. Yeah. There's like, you could cast this show 20 times over with no trouble.
We could, but instead...
And you could do the version where, like, people swap around. So, like, the Miss Hannigan and the Grace, you pick actors that can do both, and you just swap them. So we could put, like...
Put them in a mixed
bag. So Audra McDonald could, you know, do Grace again, but then she could, like...
And then go Miss Hannigan. And she could play Lily.
She could play Lily. I like that
And maybe
idea.
Kristen Chenoweth, and then you can keep swapping them. Or, you know,
I love
that.
Productions
like
that. I think it'll be great.
Keeping it fresh.
It's a lot to learn, but they're going to do great in it.
Some tracks are probably not as bad as others.
Let's do... I mean, Lily, probably quite easy in comparison
All
to
right.
Hannigan.
Let's have a look at those top five lists. Top five.
Just purely based on the 700 to 900 times a year in one country, I am going to put it on top five overproduced musicals. I think 700 to 900 times is quite a lot. That's a lot.
Is.
That's a big number.
I mean, I've done it twice in like a decade. A lot to me.
It could be on my top five of musicals with a plucky young lady as the lead. You know, we're talking Secret Garden, Matilda, Anne of Green Gables, the musical. You know, also another redheaded Anne, Annie. So, you know, it's that top five of...
Also another musical that broke my heart when it was adapted into a musical. That's just not what I wanted it to be.
Anne of Green Gables.
Yeah,
my heart. I was in it. Well, you know, community theater production. Okay.
We have things to talk about later.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later.
I would say top five shows that are very appropriate for children and schools to do.
Yeah,
the whole
or just roles for children
down.
In general.
Yeah,
like they're, it's good. They get a lot of.
But if you have the choice, if you have the choice between doing the school version of Rent or the school version of Annie. I implore you, please do Annie.
Don't do Rent. If you have to choose between Back to the 80s and Annie Jr., pick Annie Jr.
Yes. Please, always pick Annie Jr.
So it sounds like you love Annie, Julie. So this is on your top five list of musicals I love.
It's not.
That was a nice try though, Matt. That was a really nice try.
Top five musicals I wish I was never in. If it's on that one.
I think that's like top five soundtracks that stick in your head. Like, even like, I will randomly have Tomorrow. I'll wake up with Tomorrow in my head sometimes. I don't know how. I don't know why. It's just there.
It's very cute.
Top five musicals that the set designer can just have a party with.
Yeah.
Because our set was so amazing. Like, you know, you think of like Sound of Music and the Marble Staircase, and Annie's got like that big staircase and the Christmas tree. It was like being in the Nutcracker. It was fantastic. So
I really liked
top five musicals that set designer can have a absolute party with.
I have that one down.
The
I agree.
Documentary where they found their Annie, that they were like, we want her to come out of a drawer from the side of the stairs. And the guy that was making the drawer in said side of stairs is like, okay. It's going to have some weight-bearing issues.
If I can, I will.
I'll make it happen.
Good for him, though. I mean, the house that they used in the 1982 movie was owned by the CEO of Woolworths at the time. And when he had no longer enough money to keep the house, it became Monmouth University, which is where Aileen Quinn then went on to teach theatre. So she came back for like a speech, and she saw the staircase, and she was just like, oh, I'm just emotional about it. And they got her to like walk up the stairs and sing Tomorrow as she's coming down the stairs, and she's like, this is the place I need to be. So immediately then they were like, do you want to teach? And she's like, yes. So yes. Like format of this musical, the sets have been quite extravagant because they took a long time, which is awesome.
And how about top five musicals that have a Christmas song that you've never heard in your life?
I like the Christmas song.
I'm getting
song.
A new deal for Christmas this year. You're like, what is going on here? It's Christmas? And what is this song? And the orphans are pretending to be reindeers, and it's so confusing. We had to do it for Carol's in the Domain, and everybody was like, I don't know what is happening here. Let it snow, Jingle Bell Rock. I'm getting a new deal for Christmas? What?
But there's also, like, the stage had more songs in it that were sadly cut from the movies.
Cut a lot.
And they're better songs. Yeah.
Some of them.
Bangers. But I was always really happy by that time we got to that song because I was like, it's almost over. I'm almost at bows. I can go home soon.
Were you a child in this production?
No.
Okay, just checking.
I'm also going to put this... Sorry, I'm dominating this section.
No,
I'm going to put
it
in top five opening cast CD recordings of Australian musicals because we had a cast recording, Sound of Music with Lisa McCune and Drew Drexel. Like they did... Like that was like a thing for a while. Instead of doing an Australian cast recording, they would just do a recording of opening night and then release it as a CD. Yeah. So this is definitely on my top five, you know...
Opening
night cast recordings of Australian Broadway.
I'll take
That's
it.
Awesome.
Something like that.
Australian Broadway.
I'm going to put top five songs you shouldn't use at an audition for this show.
1,000%.
Just because it is probably in the top five, unless you're a child auditioning for a show.
And then maybe just don't do Tomorrow.
And yeah, maybe do Maybe.
Do Maybe.
heard.
Any more top fives?
Not from me.
Not from you. Not from me.
Top five iconic red dresses. In
of course.
Musicals.
Maybe top five iconic hair styles.
Hello Dolly. Yeah, there are some actually very iconic.
Chorus line.
There was maybe an iconic red dress.
But this one's definitely up there. You say red dresses in Broadway music. If people are
You would think
in
Annie.
The right headspace.
Or if you said Annie, immediately everyone thinks of the red dress. Whereas I don't think if you said a chorus line, I think of the lineup before I think
of
Cassie.
The mirrors.
You know? Oh, look at that.
Any more top fives? Top fives going once, going
top
twice.
Top five wigs for children.
It's okay. No more from you. That's enough from you now. Oh dear, Matt, tell us, you're in some pretty fun things at the moment. Tell us about them.
Well, I am playing Max Bialystock in The Producers at the Brisbane Powerhouse, which is super exciting. I've only actually done, I've been in Australia for 20 years and I've done two major musicals, The Producers, the original Australian cast, and then Annie. And then everything else, you know, have been like, you know, other professional shows, but smaller shows. So that's really exciting. And it's a big role. It's as big as Annie. So I'm the Annie of The Producers, the Max Bialystock. You're going to follow my journey just like you follow. I'm going to guide you through it just like Annie guides you through the show Annie. Oh,
that is very good at keeping to the podcast episode topic, Matt. I've never heard Max Bialystock compared to Annie before, but I enjoy it.
But it's going
to
be a spectacular show. James Lee, who was in Annie with me, is in The Producers playing Roger DeBris. So we were both in Annie together.
Oh, Matt, if you don't walk out in a red curly wig now for Max Bialystock, I'm going to be severely disappointed.
Betrayed!
You'll just hear, no! What? That's all I picture.
Well, we did wear red noses for Red Nose Day when we did the producers and Annie, I think. I don't know. Like, there was one of those things, you know, like with, if you're in a show sometimes.
I vaguely remember that happening.
Red Nose Day,
So that is running from Thursday the 4th to Saturday the 5th of March.
That is correct. That's correct. Tickets available.
BrisbanePowerhouse.org. You can get your tickets. I'm currently on the webpage buying KB and my tickets.
This is the first production for a relatively new company.
Yes, this is an Altitude Theatre Company, which is Adam Gardner and Joe Simons, and they are putting on four musicals this year, so this is their first one, their big sort of fluffy, sparkly one, and then they're doing Once on This Island, they're doing a show, I think it's called Blood Song, which is a one-woman show, I believe, and then they're finishing off their year with The Boy from Oz.
Amazing.
In venues, like, all over Brisbane, bringing like taking advantage of all of the professional actors who are currently in Queensland and staying in Queensland because things have been a little bit crazy with traveling.
And giving
new people a chance. So yeah, it's a great company, Altitude Theatre. Check them out and come see the producers at Brisbane Power before the next review, before the next revival of Annie. We'll talk to them about whether they can do that next year.
Well, I'm excited to see the show. KB's going to come with me because I'm making it. And because she's super excited to come with me.
Absolutely. Yeah, we, there are a lot of people we know in this show, so it's going to be
that
awesome.
That too. I'm mostly there for the red wig.
Now.
And just like Annie, it's hit after hit after hit.
I'd say there's more bangers in the producers than there is in Annie. Putting it out there.
But it's the same book writer, Thomas Meehan.
Oh, the things
wrote
you
the book for Annie and wrote the book for the producers. So there you go. Ties it, tie-ins.
Matt, you are so good at this.
Just the best.
It's like I've, you know, been doing this for like 30 years. I'm such a Broadway nerd. So yes, I can, I can pretty much weave a very intricate tapestry of most subjects.
I love it.
Well,
7 degrees of Eileen Quinn.
If you are looking to find us on the web, you've probably done that already, but you can head to our website, www.thatsnotcanonproductions.com/mtmeak. You can find us on Facebook, Musicals Taught Me Everything I Know. You can find us on Instagram, Musicals Teach Me. And should you feel generous and maybe you want to chuck a couple of dollary doos our way, you can head
to our Warbucks.
Missed opportunity, Julie. If we didn't have Matt here, what would have happened?
Stay here forever. patreon.com/musicals taught me everything I know. You can do that. Where, of course, when we just get a couple more Patreons.
Yeah, just two more.
Zane will be doing the Necronomicon dance in a morph suit.
Yeah.
So that's
and
something
sprinkling
to
more
to.
Than that. He's gonna do a rap.
Can he wear an Annie wig? Can he rap It's a Hard Knock Life, the Jay-Z version?
Yes, that's going to happen. We're going to put that on the website, which requires Zane to put that on the website.
Well, I'm so glad we're doing Annie. You know, like, now we've got all these great ideas.
I can't wait. All right, well, thank you so much for joining us, Matt.
It's been my pleasure. Thank you.
It's been so wonderful. Thank you, KB.
Oh, anytime, Julie.
Oh,
thank you, Julie.
We'll see you next time.
Yeah.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.